So the first voice you're going to hear is that of Laura Tucker, who's still around, still working on homeless issues somewhat, though she's a struggling poor person who doesn't have a lot of time to do that, nor a lot of resources. At the time of this call-in, and again, I'm a little bit uncertain as to the exact location in time of where we are. This is 1999, September 5th, I guess. Laura was eventually chosen to be, as I mentioned before, sort of a very lowly paid secretary of this funded task force, funded by the city, with the main staff person appointed being Don Lane, who was formerly a city council member in the late 80s and early 90s and then became mayor and established sort of a cottage industry. Some would say a lifelong philanthropic pursuit. Depends on who you talk to, I guess. If you talk to me, you get the former. Talk to him, you probably get the latter. Although I guess he regards it as sort of public service. He opened various businesses, and he became involved with the Homeless Community Resource Center out at 115 Coral Street, which later changed into the Homeless Services Center, which then became Housing Matters. Previously, I called it the Homeless Lack of Services Center, and then finally Funding Matters. He became mayor again in the last decade and continued throughout that to take no strong position opposing the sleeping ordinance in any consistent way. It may have been at certain points during his time out of office he took a different position, but that didn't last for long when he reached office. We finally got him to propose the abolition of the sleeping sections of the camping ordinance around the time when Martin versus Boise was coming up. That is, it was then called Bell versus Boise, the federal case that said you don't take people into custody or jail or fine them for actually sleeping at night if they have no place to go, which has been pretty obvious for decades as a matter of seeming, should be a constitutional right. One would think it is, but not in Santa Cruz and not in many California cities unless fought for, as we were fighting for it and continue to fight for it. Anyway, Lane got the lion's share of the money on this homeless issues task force that was set up, which involved Linda LeMaster as chair, as I may have mentioned before. I called her Lighthouse Linda at the time. She was a longtime activist fighting for civil rights homeless folks, although she was much more politically acceptable to the establishment and harder to get to make outspoken statements or take strong actions. And as a consequence, she allowed the Homeless Issues Task Force to be led by the nose, essentially, into a passive position where they came up with all the right positions but took no actions that would pressure the city council, where there was a 4-3 so-called progressive majority, we had thought. That was Catherine Byers, Tim Fitzmaurice, Christopher Crone, and Keith Sugar, and on the minority were Mike Rotkin, Michael Hernandez, and, of course, the inevitable Cynthia Matthews. But let's just roll into the show as it was happening. This is, again, the second half of the show. And some of the stuff will speak for itself, and I occasionally will interrupt if it seems it's helpful to do so.
Group of activists. And if you look at the members of the meat of the task force, how many of them really are? I mean, we have the director of the Homeless Services Center who has done activism in the past, but is he really calling himself an activist on this board? Paul. And if you look at the members of the meat of the task force, how many of them really are? I mean, we have the director of the Homeless Services Center who has done activism in the past, but is he really calling himself an activist on this board? Paul Brindell? No. Tom Nedelsky from the Quakers? Certainly not. Definitely not Peter Eberle from the Downtown Association or Nancy Anacito from the Harvey West community. I mean, it's not really a group of activists.
Well, there are...
I don't see you and Becky on the
no, certainly
task
not.
Force.
Certainly not, because as I pointed out, it's not a task force. It's more of a task farce.
And Becky Johnson was the Becky she's referring to. a woman I call Beggar Backer Becky. You probably heard her on the air at different points here still, because she weighs in. She now lives down south in Monterey County, but still retains an interest working with Wes White of Salinas for homeless civil rights down there.
But given the makeup of what it is, the question is, could anything be done with it? And the answer, to me, will really begin to come out on Tuesday. And one of the things, as I said, that I think you clearly need is you need food and you need information going out to the homeless. And you probably need information going out to the groups of people that are, you know, really pressure groups in the city council, like SCAN, the group that elected them, Santa Cruz Action Network, like the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, which has activists who are, you know, with the Peace and Freedom Party. All
you
these
mean they need to know about the meetings, where they are, and
They need to come to the meetings. They need to speak up at the meetings. And actually, what we need to use these meetings for are, we need to use them as kickoff points for other things. In other words, you might not be able, in the actual course of the meeting, to do a march to City Hall, you know, an hour later.
Right.
But you would use the discussion at the meeting and the homeless people attending to organize through.
And it's relevant what we're talking about, because in 1998, it was these organizations, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, the Green Party, Peace and Freedom Party, student groups, numerous other groups that actually helped to elect this four-member majority on the Santa Cruz City Council that unfortunately turned tail when Catherine Byers and Tim Fitzmaurice decided that it was just a little too to provide direct changes in ordinances that should have been changed decades ago, such as the sleeping sections of the camping ordinance, and went the other way and blocked that kind of reform.
Now, it's
actually, that would be great.
But actually,
but who's going to do that?
Well, I'm hoping that you would have the task force itself stating, we're going to give food to homeless people who come, and we're going to make sure that there's outreach done to make sure that homeless people know about the hot issues that are happening at each meeting. What they ideally need is
food, outreach, and transportation.
Transportation.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's
I'll go ahead and
try and talk to the people about it who are on the task force.
The agenda for this next meeting has already been sent out, so it would have to be the next meeting.
No. You're wrong.
Oh, really?
You're wrong about that. You can fit that in under existing agenda items.
I can?
Sure, or you can ask. It can be treated as something that is assumed. That is to say, you call Linda LeMaster, who's the chair, and you say to Linda, you know, it seems obvious that part of our charge is to get homeless people to come. Therefore, we'd like to get some food to the meeting. We'd like to get some, you know, and Linda could call up and get people to volunteer food, or she could ask people like myself to help volunteer, and I would probably be happy to help, or Joe Schultz, who's done homeless stuff in the past.
Yeah.
In other words, it could be done, it could be sort of facilitated through that process. And it doesn't have to be done as an agenda item, I don't think.
Oh, it doesn't. Okay, so just call Linda right now.
Right, as long as you're not making some policy statement.
Okay, tell her I'm not calling as a friend, I'm calling as a task force member, even though I don't know if I am one.
Or perhaps a minion of Robert Norris.
I'm calling as a minion of Don Lane's little helper and Robert's crony.
And Lane was paid, I think, three times as much, four times as much. I think it was $25,000 compared to Laura Tucker's $5,000 for work on this task force, though Laura essentially did most of the work in terms of recording everything that was going on, preparing the agendas, and so forth. It's interesting to note that all this, it be called conspiring, was done very publicly, because this was, as you can hear, was a radio show that was broadcast on the air. I don't think at that time it was archived, but it was certainly broadcast, and anybody could hear it, anybody could call in, and numerous people did.
Well, again, the idea here, and although one hopes that on some level Don Lane and even Scott Kennedy would like to see, you know, the kinds of changes that we all propose. Kennedy, after all, for years has claimed he's against not just the sleeping ban, but as Paul Brindill has stated more openly, against the camping ordinance generally.
And Lane, I should say, Kennedy was the co-founder of the Resource Center for Nonviolence in Santa Cruz back in the 70s. I think it was the 70s, might have been earlier. A man who refused to pay war taxes, who came into the Santa Cruz City Council race and was elected in 1990 with a very liberal agenda, and took very liberal positions for the first few years on the City Council, voting for a small homeless campground and the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep's proposal in 1990 and supported the right of protesters against the Iraqi war who were homeless at the town clock when the reactionary minority wanted to turn the town clock into a closed area, which they eventually did. The city actually did that, but he was originally quite liberal. He died, I guess, in 2011 or thereabouts after essentially, I think, being corrupted, or maybe he'd always felt that way, by his position in office, by that Santa Cruz City Council, by his connections with the police department, his desire to get broader community support through appealing to the more reactionary segments of the community. Who can speculate why, but that's what happened, and I fear that's often what happens to people who get into positions of power. The case of somebody like Drew Glover is very rare, but even Glover himself, he didn't, when he was being attacked, he adopted the positions of his advisors to back down, to keep a low profile, to try to ignore the recall, and to ignore the city council minority, headed by Martine Watkins at that time, became the temporary majority back and forth with Justin Cummings turning tail and running and doing his Uncle Tom dance, or position, if you will. Let's go back to 1999.
Well, and even Mike Rutkin, which I was surprised to hear.
Yeah, given that, now Rutkin is still in favor of the sleeping ban and the camping ordinance.
But you had said something positive about
it. He's in favor of a campground, maybe somewhere, somehow, someday, if somebody comes to him with all the details.
Right.
And Mike Rutkin, another long-time, many-time mayor in Santa Cruz, he never abandoned his opposition to decriminalizing sleeping in Santa Cruz. Even when he was chair of or strong member of the board of the ACLU, he helped to freeze that board's position and keep that issue out of it, or keep the local ACLU away from it, which is still very timid on the issue, though under Peter Gelblum, somewhat less so. But you don't see them doing injunctive relief or trying to act on injunctive relief or make strong statements about there are some statements that are now being made about the Tolo camping ordinance, and that's true and good for them. But in terms of actually publicly defending people outside, criticizing local police behaviors, except for some fashionable issues like opposing surveillance devices and bear cats and things of that sort. I think they opposed the bear cat a few years ago. That's the armored vehicle that the city got and still has and still uses when it chooses, that the local ACLU ain't so hot about that. There you are. We have to form our own organizations.
Right. You know, I suppose we should all get excited about that. But the fact is that what we need are people who are, in effect, active when they reach positions of power. And Lane and Kennedy and all these people have shown themselves not so. So it's not like a personal attack. We say, we really don't want, you know, you're not the right person here. It's more just, you know, sorting out apples into the apple barrel and oranges into the orange barrel. But I think once this, if a group of activists took the lead here, I think that something could be done. And I think a lot of this has got to happen outside this committee. This committee is pretty much, you know, again, I think people should come to the Tuesday meeting. Encourage him to vote to end the sleeping ban, which is just a little committee making a little recommendation.
Where is it being held?
It's being held in the ABC room of the Civic Auditorium at 5:30 on September 7th, Tuesday.
Okay, I wonder if other people want to call in.
Let's find out.
And what actually happened, interestingly enough, and I don't know if it was done on that Tuesday or a month or two later, the task force to examine the camping ordinance actually did come out, not just in opposition to the sleeping sections of the camping ordinance, but to the entire camping ordinance itself. That is to say, it should not only not be a crime to fall asleep after 11, as it was currently the law until the Tolo law. Well, it still is the law, really. The Tolo law has not been passed. It was delayed until the second meeting in June, I guess June 7th or 8th or thereabouts. But the task force came out with a public statement demanding there be emergency action. Well, urging there be emergency action on the city council before the winter around a number of issues, one of which was the abolition of the entire camping ordinance, which meant you could not just sleep at night, but you could set up a tent to protect yourself, and not just at night, but during the day. That was a far more radical position, and it was adopted unanimously by the task force, which was very surprising, because the task force included the head of the Downtown Association, Peter Eberle, and as we know, the new head of the Downtown Association, Sonja Brunner, is now being investigated for supporting a harsh anti-homeless ordinance that completely criminalizes both sleeping, camping, even storing your goods during the day in a tent, unless it's part of some established scheme, and you can be arrested for it, you can be cited for it, you can be fined for it once this law gets its second reading. And you can be punished for it even before this law gets its second reading, simply because the police have decided to sweep away your property as the, well, at least as Caltran did with the Highway 9, Highway 1 folks, under the urging of the city council. I guess the police assisted in that. And so you might say they don't give a shit about Martin versus Boise, and they don't give a shit about COVID, and they don't give a shit about the local law. The local law, of course, at the time is currently still the camping ordinance, as it was passed in 1978 and was law during the time that you're hearing this 1999 flashback.
And also, before I get off, I wanted to... I called David for the number for Free Radio before I called you, and he mentioned that... Bob LaMonica, I don't know if you heard about this, had a table down there.
Yes, yes, actually, we've talked about that on the air just today.
Okay.
We spent about an hour and a half on it.
Okay.
And I believe she's referring to David Silva, who died several years ago abroad, longtime activist with the Green Party fighting for civil rights, doing hunger fasts and all kinds of activity, as well as Bob LaMonica, who you may have heard on the air occasionally, or you've heard me interview him. I don't know about recently, but he was a fighter for hemp rights, the right to use and grow hemp for industrial use, and also for rent control. And that was him then. Not so much recently, but who knows? Maybe we'll hear from him again.
All right. Did you want to say something about that?
No, I just heard about it, but I just wanted to...
Yeah, it's quite shocking.
Yeah. So everybody's going to show up at the farmer's market next Wednesday and raise hell?
If they do, I suspect the police just won't even be there. That's their usual approach. You know, they do a stealth sting, and then when everybody comes there, they're not there at all. And then they come back.
You can set up a big table, and it'll be a good...
Oh, yeah, it'll be as normal. I mean, for 5 years, people set up tables, and it'll just be another day at the farmer's market. The question is, how do we, you know, deal with this abuse of power by Howes and possibly by Belcher and Barisoni?
Yeah.
Talk to you later.
Okay, thanks, Robert.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And Belcher was the chief of police at that time. He has the position that Andy Mills now has. Barisoni was the city attorney whose assistant, Tony Condotti, took over the job about a decade ago. And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. And there's that ding-a-ling-a-ling-a phone going ding-a-ling-a-ling-a.
Hey there, caller. You're on the air.
Hello, Robert. This is another Robert calling.
Go ahead, Robert.
Hello, dude. How are you?
I'm good.
Okay, man. I got to tell you.
And this is Robert of Robert and Eleanor, who you'll hear both those folks talking. Very concerned activists around disabled rights. And they had previously been on the air at that time talking about how the city was, and actually private authorities like the John Stewart Company, were discriminating against homeless people where they were living, and how they were fighting back with lawsuits and other defensive measures.
Listening to what this woman just had to say and her lack of knowledge just tells me exactly why you're in the position that you're in. It goes on and on and on, the talk and talk and talk. I think people like this are better off staying home taking care of their babies. We really don't need this. She doesn't know this, she doesn't know that, it's a joke. I have Eleanor, who is going to come on the line. I just wanted to make one more comment before I put her on. She's far more intelligent than I. I urged from way back from Sean and all you activists to get your butt together and to use your efforts, which are considerable and very intelligent, to sue the city for this, that, and the other thing. It just...
And when he speaks of Sean, he refers to a man named Sean Alimi, a guy called Shit Kicker Sean, who was a fellow who independently started a group called Feed the People. And he hit Pacific Avenue, if not daily, quite frequently with PB&J sandwiches and other edibles, and was pursued by police, harassed by police, and also helped to establish a 8-month-long city council vigil during 1996, 3 years before this, again, fighting the sleeping ordinance.
It's not happening. It's just nothing but complaints and complaints and review boards and talking and talking. A lawsuit, many lawsuits, multiple lawsuits, will speak far louder than all these words. This is a city who is adamant. It's going to get worse. It's going to get much worse. I can't believe the things that are going on. I wish that, I mean, I'm busy with a disabled woman fighting the compensation system. I only wish that if I do reach settlement, that I will be able to fight these people, bring multiple lawsuits. That's my advice. And here's Eleanor.
Thank you, Robert.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, Eleanor.
I had a couple of comments. I was just getting my call into you when the last caller got in, so I had to sit it out. Mm-hmm. And two areas I wanted to comment on. If we can backtrack a little first to the tabling issue with Bob LaMonica.
Sure.
I hope he's listening. I tip my hat to you, Bob. In your usual way, you have done it correctly. And I say go for it.
I think, again, she's referring to Bob's attempt to get a local initiative together to establish rent control in Santa Cruz, which I think he wasn't successful at, but he attempted to do it, and he was pressured and harassed by police for being at the farmers market and doing it, as independent vendors are, as other activists have been, as I was. I was repeatedly arrested at the farmers market several years later, after 2001, and I think it was before the Twin Towers bombings. It was I was trying to defend the rights of the drummers and also of hippies who were being harassed at the market, I thought, for their lifestyle. And the head of the market, Janet Blazer, at that time, had me arrested twice by Officer Lauren Butchie Baker, who was pretty notorious around Santa Cruz for harassing homeless people, but later gained fame as the guy who got shot dead along with Elizabeth Butler in a bungled operation, a police operation, and became the great hero and fundraiser for the police department. It's kind of ironic. Anyway, here's more from Eleanor.
And you had an answer. You had a question. What do we do about this? Well, you know my answer is you sue. And it doesn't cost thousands. Law clerks put together briefs. Lawyers don't put together briefs. You get law students, and they'll put it together for you. That's what Bob LaMonica should do. Because it's just as you said, you beat them down, and they pop up again. You beat them down, and they pop up again. You gotta sue them. Look what just happened in New York. This black group in Harlem, I don't know if you've heard about it.
Tell me.
Well, I can't remember the guy's name, the leader, Khalib something or other, had the Million Man Youth March last year in Harlem. And they came along with 4,000 riot squads, partitioned off the streets, and did what the usual thing they do.
Giuliani's Goon Squad,
and then they blocked it for this year. Guess what he did? He sued the city. And they went on this year. And they didn't block off streets, and they didn't turn it into a police riot like they did last year. A simple lawsuit. The city of New York backed down. This city backs down from everything. Name me a single issue that they've stood up on. These people are ripe for the lawsuit.
Well, I'm not familiar with the background of the New York City lawsuit, but I suspect they had the support of, for example, the New York City ACLU.
I don't know. I think he did it independently. But whatever the case is, I'm on the phone now. I have to wait for the phone to get through. He knows it.
Go ahead.
Anyway, we're getting hassled. she's getting air. Come on, I'm disabled. I have to be this close. I can't walk, mister. From here to there is all I can do. You see what they do to disabled people in this town? And I got to tell you something. I'm a customer in this place.
So what place are you
calling from? I'm at a gas station. I'm at a 76 gas station, Santa Cruz, where I bring my money every single day for gas in this town, and the man is moving me from here.
Now, you've only been on the phone for about 7 minutes.
Well, I was waiting here to get on the phone, but other people came and used the phone in between, and other people are getting gas. He knows I've gotten my car repaired here. He knows I have to bring the phone close to the car close to a phone because I can't walk, and standing more than a few minutes is difficult, which brings me to another subject. There isn't a single phone in this town, public phone, that is handicap accessible. This should be blued off for handicapped people so that we can get to these phones. This is one of the few ones in the whole town that I can actually get to.
That's an excellent idea.
Yes. Well, try and get it done. I mean, I'm fighting about three battles right now. Robert told you workers' comp. I've got one against the state.
More hassles?
It's more of a believe me, if you're inconvenient, try not being able to walk. Very inconvenient. Very. And having to fight your battle for your rights is difficult, too. By the way, I'm on the air with the radio station. They're listening to all of this. Tune in, Free Radio, 96.3. I'm on right now.
So
you'll get some more interesting news about the rights of the less fortunate.
Why don't you give the address of the 76 station?
This is Water Street in SoCal. It's the 76 station. Who I get my car repaired at, who I get my gas from every day, who I buy my newspapers from. My caregiver does all this for me because I can't. They know it because they see me in a wheelchair here. And it's inconveniencing those people who can walk and who can drive their car. They don't want to turn around and back in. It's too much of an inconvenience.
I see.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, where was I? Back to the Homeless Task Force, which I'm going to be there Tuesday, Robert.
Good.
Regarding the Homeless Task Force, I support what you're saying, and I really have to tell you honestly right now, I'm so shaken, and I can't stand any longer, that I can't give you my positive input, except for one thing I remember. You gave the message in the beginning of the program that you encouraged that there should be, and I agree with you, homeless people to be on this task force, but you give a number with a voicemail. Leave your number, and they'll get back to you.
Yeah.
How do you get back to a homeless person?
Okay, the way to do that, and it's a very good question, is you have to call during working hours, 9 to 5, on weekdays, and you can get a hold of Ken Cole, the Homeless Services Center.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, yeah. I got to get off the air. I'm my body is collapsing here. I'm really sorry to you and your listening audience that we didn't get to do the constructive talking that I called for.
Please call again when you can, Eleanor.
Okay, I'll see you Tuesday, and God bless you, and thanks for being there. And you stay right with the truth. We don't need waffling from anybody, and you're going to hear a lot from me on Tuesday.
Hey, good.
God bless you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Eleanor, a disabled activist who spoke very eloquently at City Council. It is a difficult subject for people to know what to do something about. And, you know, I bet I know who that is. Let's see who that is.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. Hey. You're liking phone calls right after another, huh?
Oh, this is great.
I'm glad.
And this is Doug McGrath, died several years ago. He and Marilyn Weaver, a couple, were instrumental in speaking up for homeless civil rights in a number of ways. You'll hear them talk about that comes up in some of this conversation. He, I believe, along with Marilyn, or one of the two, became members of the Homeless Issues Task Force. Again, to no avail in getting a press conference or direct demonstration activity going. But as I said, they produced a report that you can find on the homeless on the HUF website, the Homeless United for Freedom, Friendship and Freedom website. Look for Homeless Issues Task Force report. You'll find it. Probably in the there's a series of sections on the HUF website. If you have any questions, you want to give me a call, I'll direct you to it, 831-423-4833. And I think it's actually also on the available through if you browse for Homeless Issues Task Force Santa Cruz. You can find it online too.
I'm glad you're calling in.
I've been listening. The The Santa Cruz on the task force issue and filling positions, right now they're mailing out letters to people that had previous applications.
Are you one of those applicants?
Marilyn and I both had them.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time we were employed for the Homeless Community Center, and Ken Cole got the position, you know, that correlates with someone in the field, right, and health workers or whatever. So we didn't get those, but they sent us another letter dated September 1st, where it says, we've received your application for appointment to Homeless Issue Task Force dated April 18th, 1999. There are currently two remaining openings on this new task force. City Council will be making appointments within the next few weeks after a sufficient number of applications have been received. The council appreciates your interest. Do you want to hear? Anyway,
sure.
It goes on, and it says to contact Don Lane.
Yeah.
And 4205142.
That is an answering machine, by the way. And he is the staff person for the Homeless Issues Task Force. Much to my distaste, I suggest that people call instead the vice chair of the task force, who is Ken Cole, because Cole, you might actually get a real person there. And also, frankly, I think Cole is more progressive and activist in his attitudes than Don Lane is, and that's just my personal feeling on it.
I really wouldn't doubt that at all, because of everything that has not happened, like you say, and you know, and we know, that everything's been stall for like 6 years, 7 years, probably longer than that. I've only been
Doug, maybe you can tell the audience a little bit about yourself and the kind of experience you've had working around the Homeless Services Center, and I know you yourself had a real confrontation and had some real problems. Maybe you're not allowed to talk about them, I don't know. But I was rather shocked to hear what happened to you, and I think, you know, you might tell the audience just generally what your experience is. What are the major problems that have to be addressed immediately, and, you know, I guess based on that, how can we proceed?
Actually, I still have a part of a deal going with the Citizens Police Review Board on the 13th. I'm going to go see Becky Blythe, Tuesday.
8 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And that was, of course, the Police Review Board began in 1995 and was summarily executed in 2003, but it was really somewhat toothless through most of its tenure, although it had some teeth that it never used. It had the power to subpoena police officers to hold public hearings, which it never did. It had the power to hire an independent investigator, which it never did when there were any of the shootings, either of Happy John Dine or of Brian Andrus, who you'll hear a little bit about, mentioned briefly on this tape. And you can probably find some of it in other flashbacks if you go to the Huff website, and you'll see flashbacks. And if you go to flashbacks from 1999, some of them, particularly in late 1998. So the Police Review Board itself was appointed by the City Council and was largely in the hands of the police department. That was my perspective on it. But we did what we could. We kept pressing them. We kept showing up in numbers, which is what people who believe in the political road go to your political bodies, you know, demand they do this, demand they do that. And there's nothing wrong with that, provided you recognize when in a certain situation isn't working and you have to carry things further, then you might actually get somewhere, particularly if you have a community consensus or a large minority consensus on that.
And I find a waiver to not pursue a suit against the Homeless Community Resource Center. They didn't say I couldn't talk about them or whatever.
Now, you were ousted from your house illegally by a police officer at the urging of Karen Gillette, or with the permission of Karen Gillette previously?
Karen Gillette was the head of the Homeless Community Resource Center, which predated the Homeless Services Center, which actually was created, I think, in 1999, sort of as it supplanted the Homeless Community Resource Center. The Homeless Community Resource Center was in exactly the same place at 115 Coral Street, and it grew out of a thing called the Free Meal, which was created by activists. It was originally called Calamity's Cupboard. It was formed by activists doing food distribution at the town clock, which the city attempted to arrest repeatedly until it got too embarrassing for them, and then they established a out of town, get the homeless away from the downtown area food distribution thing called Free Meal, run by Karen Gillette. I called her QC, Queen of the Cupcakes, Karen, because she would give away treats to homeless people and at the same time undermined homeless activism. After originally supporting it, that often happens when people become involved with getting city money.
Homeless Services Center director, is that accurate or not?
That's pretty much, they tried. They came and told me I didn't have any rights and this, that, and the other. She had already been by with a couple of other people trying to explain something to me that I'd already contacted, you know, legal advice, you know.
You were previously a paralegal
working on it.
You were essentially an employee that she wanted to get rid of, is that the idea, or?
I really don't know exactly what happened. All I know that she took the story of the other parties as the truth or something. It was related to the truth, but it took about a month later for us to get it cleared up.
The police did enter into your house and tell you to move, right? Officer Seeley came in and said,
Officer Seeley came and told me, I was on my way to my lawyer, and he was explaining to me that I had to make a decision with Karen Gillette, you know, pertaining to further employment there, and I had to make a decision right then, immediately. I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't lock my door. I had no rights. And he was like, well, essentially, you know, trying to, you know, be a liaison between me and my employment, with his gun and blue uniform and car and everything. I'd heard they'd been to lunch together.
Well, Officer Celia has also acquired notoriety for going after a man who was like 300 yards from the railroad tracks, sitting down trying to, I don't know, drink a beer, and didn't try to get him on an open container charge, but threatened to arrest him for trespass. Actually took him to court, and of course the charges were dismissed last week after a month and a half of anxiety and tension and pressure for that homeless person.
There's a correlation with this action and that. He was going off on his own and making all sorts of things. This right here was totally on his own, and then he lied to the lawyer about it. He was, and I have all that on paper. It'll come out on the 13th. Anyway, but he was telling several people. He all of a sudden started picking on the homeless, explaining to them that it was trespassing to be on the right-of-way of the railroad tracks for a little while, and I hear that he really didn't have any... no one told him to do that. He just kind of took it on his own, and I heard that his duty sergeant, you know, told him to lay off, but he had, I guess he did pursue it in one instance. He told another friend that I know this. He was telling all the homeless people, they were telling me about it where I worked down there. It's the safest route to Poganip on a bicycle or walking, no matter what, is going down the tracks all the way till you get across and you can go into Rincon.
Well, it wasn't even that this guy was on the railroad right-of-way. He was way off the railroad right away. He was sitting, you know, oh, God. I'm not very good at judging distances, but it was half a block down from the railway in the bushes. He showed me where he was sitting. He showed me where he'd been sitting, and we actually videoed the area. Now, he could have been lying to us, but
well, his particular perspective on law is that if he can make you believe it, then, well, you know, that's the real law.
Well, Officer
Seeley, and he attempted that with me, and so we actually said no.
Well, Officer Seeley also, I know, was and I got another complaint about that. He told another homeless man that walking through that driveway that goes between Coral Street and, you know, the Beans restaurant one block over the coffee shop, that he harassed him by saying he couldn't be there. And then when he was leaving, he held up a can of carburetor fluid and said, hey, you forgot your beer? I mean, I haven't heard that.
I know who
Seeley's been disciplined or reprimanded. I guess you're telling me his duty sergeant has done
something.
I think
it was brake fluid.
Brake fluid. There we go. Well, that's a little different.
And I don't know if Officer Seeley is still on the police force. And I also don't know if we're speaking of the father, Eric Seeley, or the son. But he doesn't seem to be on the roster of the police force as of a year ago that I've got posted on my wall here in 2021. So there.
I guess.
Yeah.
Putting the brakes on.
Yeah.
You know, you also, Duggar, I remember you acquired some some fame about a year ago when your complaint about the shooting of Brian Andrus was summarily dumped into the trash can by Officer, or I should say Chief Steve Belcher. And actually, even the CPRB, which ended up doing nothing anyway in the end, got a little miffed because they're supposed to rubber stamp before they do nothing. And they were denied the chance to rubber stamp. But you brought up this issue rather strongly at that time. The man who was shot four or five times by police, I think at least once in the back when the police invaded his house claiming that he was abusing his wife when no such thing was happening, and they ignored the possibility of a whole bunch of lesser alternatives that they could have used. Instead, they shot him, and then they arrested him and sent him to jail for 4 years for defending his house with an aluminum bat, baseball bat. You brought up that issue. When you tried to complain about it to Police Chief Belcher, he simply dismissed your complaint. He didn't even forward it to the Citizens Police Review Board. So you've done some work in the past of trying to contest police misconduct.
Well, it seems to help. You know, he shot himself in the foot on that one because it seemed to have, like, opened the door a little bit, although I swear I've yet to see anything actually done. Then they swap around the players, you know, if some of the other players start to figure we've got to do something.
What do you think of the new Homeless Services Center? What's your view of Director Ken Cole?
I really think I got a real good opinion of him, and I think, you know, he's got a lot of big, hard job ahead of him. He's got to go back, and instead of just playing everything off the cuff, he's got to go back to doing exactly what's all mandated is to be done there. And then if they need more, it's a long story. But, he's got a tough job. He's got to get it all back in alignment now after it was kind of operated in a...
Well, there were a lot of
whatever.
There were a lot of complaints of cronyism under the management of Karen Gillette, and I've still heard a few under Ken Cole's management. What do you think about the problem of cronyism at a place like the Homeless Services Center, the place that where homeless people go to make phone calls and wash their laundry and have a meal at least once a day, kind of one and a half times a day if you count breakfast?
And of course, that ended in 2015 when the new manager of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as it became known to me, that would be Phil Kramer, decided to abandon all meals and to become simply more very explicitly a grant magnet using the pretext of housing matters, although they didn't change the name for a couple years after that, as a consequence of which a number of us started the Freedom Sleepers, who were concerned, you know, with the lack of services at the Homeless Lack of Services Center and elsewhere in town, as well as the criminalization of homeless under the sleeping ban. And we did our Tuesday night sleepovers on the sidewalk outside City Hall.
Bad. It's bad. You know, everyone there is like in refugee status. And, you know, this is a third world type of political system that arises in everything. It arises in all. It rises at Salvation Army. You'll see it in Goodwill. It's inherent. It's something that has to be addressed, and you have to be really on top of, especially the people in supervisor repositions. Have to know that it's going to be there, and they got to keep eye on it, because it just happens. It just crops right up.
Hmm. Now, have you had any experience with city council, the new city council members? I know I've been, you know, badly disappointed, or not. Actually, my expectations were not terribly high, but my bad expectations were unfortunately borne out big time by Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar. Even most recently, when I introduced Fitzmaurice to the homeless man who had shots fired over his campsite in June, according to his account, and he was quite calm, and I felt relatively rational about it. David Silva was also a witness to this conversation where he reported this to Fitzmaurice, and it wasn't the first time he reported it. The first time he reported it was in a voicemail to Fitzmaurice where I had him speak. He didn't want to speak to police because he felt afraid of it. He didn't want to give his name, but he talked to Fitzmaurice about it. And Fitzmaurice's response was sort of, you know, oh. And I've just seen this kind of dead, oh, I'll look into it, and then nothing ever happens kind of response in the city council.
And in fact, Fitzmaurice, you may have known Tim Fitzmaurice, because he reappeared. He was mayor for a period of time and was reelected kind of part of as the right-wing segment of the so-called progressive slate. That's how I viewed him. Although the city council moved so far to the right that he began to... He was relatively progressive on the council, although... mostly by contrast, And then, of course, finally, he was chosen in 2019 when the real estate recallers moved in on Drew Glover and Chris Crone to run unsuccessfully opposing Golder, Renee Golder. And he lost to her, although it was one of those recall elections which is kind of rigged, not just because of the money, but because of the nature of the electoral system, which is that in order to stay in office, you got to get 51%, but in order to win, you just need to get a plurality. That is, say, you just need to be the most of the number of the people running. You can get less than a majority and win. And so, that's if there's more than one candidate running. And I guess I think there was only one other candidate running. There was Fitzmaurice and Golder. But in any case, Fitzmaurice, he became mayor. He was a Green Party member. He engineered a lawsuit against those of us who had tried to pressure him to not just fulfill the SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, progressive group that had him elected in Santa Cruz to city council promises to end the sleeping ban, but the statewide Green Party slate. He was a member of the Green Party. And his response to that was, our group was called the Coffee Clatch. We brought homeless people to the offices of city council in the winter of 1999-2000. Actually, 2000-2001, he became mayor in late 2000, and throughout 2001, he was mayor in Santa Cruz, Tim Fitzmaurice. And his response to our being there and bringing homeless people to his offices every morning, and, you know, peaceably, but waiting to talk to him and other council members, was to have us taken to court for harassing Anna Brooks, who's now still employed by the city, a somewhat high-strung employee with, I think, mental problems, if you will, or maybe she was simply being used as a cat's paw there. But the city went after three activists, myself, Becky Johnson, and Bernard Klitzner, and kept us in court for 6 months, although we eventually beat the lawsuit. It was time-consuming, exhausting. We tried to use it as an organizing tool, but many of the homeless activists, because they believed somehow that Tim Fitzmaurice, because he was a member of the Green Party, would do some progressive things if only we were nice enough to him or cooperative enough to him. This is the same argument you'll be hearing from Brent Adams against protest. And I think they were wrong, and I think Brent is unfortunately wrong in this too. It's not always the wrong argument, but the question is, in this situation, is it the wrong argument? Anyway, more from 1999, even before the coffee clutch happened a year later.
...endlessly for the last 6 or 9 months under these new council members. I mean, I know that it's a standard, and I suppose I shouldn't be surprised at all, but have you had any experiences one way or the other that you wish to share with us?
Well,
positive experience?
You know, some things that I'm not real sure totally on, but there's something, you know, gosh, I swear, you know, you don't want to get into conspiracy, but some of these people, it's almost after they ran for election, then someone came and they were elected, then someone came to their house in the dark of the night and gave them a list of what they were going to do.
Well, so have you...
there's someone controlling it. You know, the largest corporations and...
Have you talked to any of the council members in the last 6 months at all? Have you tried to get any kind of action on any particular things and been successful or been unsuccessful?
Well, you know...
You can say no. I still like you.
Other than trying to get on the homeless task force now, hasn't really... We didn't get on that...
Regarding this whole thing of the Homeless Issues Task Force, I feel a little embarrassed that I'm wasting so much time on the air talking about this issue. I think they're really not going anywhere. But, because they seem to be one of the few games in town and nobody else is doing any organizing, I talk a lot about them. But what we really need to do, what I've been talking to people about, and I'd like all the activists who are listening to please get in touch with me at the Huff line, which is 423-HUFF, easy to call, is we need to start some... Here we go again. Regular protests downtown of a colorful and persistent nature. And again, the constant idea I've always had, which I continue to bring up, is a completely legal protest, but one that would get in the hair big time of the merchants, which is to put a big mattress on top of your vehicle, park it legally in front of some store and just do a protest during the day from there, sleeping and singing, and not that you disturb the peace, but you and picketing and marching, urging people not to patronize downtown businesses until laws that restrict basic human rights, and I'm talking about homeless rights as well, but human rights, the right to sleep, for instance, outside if you have no other recourse, are dealt with. And we don't have, that doesn't mean that we're going to spend years trying to get a little commission to recommend to a bigger group of bozos at the city council that they are going to deal with it. No, we go to the public directly and we say, boycott these bastards until they take their hands off the throats of homeless people. That's what we need to do. And to do that, we need a core group of activists who will put in a couple hours every day with their car, with a couple of mattresses on top of their vehicle, with about five or six other people, essentially making it difficult and letting tourists know that they are supporting businesses that violate human rights. That's been one idea I've had. I'm looking for others, too. If I can find a core of 6 to 8 people to do this, I'm up for it. But again, it depends on whether we can find that. So anybody, what's your thought, first of all, about this idea?
Well, I think actually we need to stop, just like, for instance, 2:30 Wednesday, everyone needs to be down at the farmer's market. That's everyone's farmer's market. That's our farmer's market.
Sure.
And we need to quit, we need to get off some of the polarizations that we have and understand that the city council is being manipulated, by a few business interests. The homeless issue is being manipulated by those same few business interests. There's a...
And, of course, that's the interesting claim that you were hearing me read about earlier by the Fair Political Practices Commission against Downtown Association employee and city council member and vice mayor Sonia Brunner, that it's indicated by her vote on the anti-homeless camping law recently, which she should have recused herself from because the businesses... it's really a special interest law for businesses, just as the current ordinances on the books around so-called downtown problematic street behaviors is also a blank check to the police to essentially run off people at the direction of business owners.
A lot of problems with what the people are actually wanting, what they voted for, what they expected from their city council, and what they're actually getting. And it's across the board. You can listen to it on other radio stations across the Monterey Bay. And there's a lot of people getting irritated from everything. The Churco to, everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ben Churco, the guy was jailed for...
215.
And the 215 harassments of medical marijuana people. Well, what I think I may do is I may encourage people to come to this meeting at 5:30 on Tuesday, the Homeless Issues Task Force, for the sleeping ban vote. And then when the vote is over, simply march out to a protest downtown. And I'm talking about a protest that will actually sit itself down somewhere.
Wow, you're supposing that they're going to vote against it?
No, I'm even if they vote
for it. What if they vote for it?
Even if they vote for it, we're not.
Let's suppose that way.
No,
be the 100th monkey. Believe. Hey, ideals can be goals that are achieved instead of just some...
Doug, whatever way they vote makes no difference in terms of how police enforce the law. Tonight, tomorrow night, and the next night. I mean, it's nice if they vote for it. I hope they will. In a way, I kind of am expecting they will, although you never can tell, because people love to talk and talk and talk, and they get the idea that that's somehow more important than acting.
Right, it's like ridiculous.
Even if they vote for it, it's not going to
make... They want to know more about the issue.
It's not going to make any difference unless we, the activists as an outside force, march downtown and, start doing some colorful theater, maybe have some kind of... I mean, I'm not quite sure how to proceed, because I know people are tired of this. Sleep in, sleep out, sleep ons, sleep arounds are just, they've been done before. But the reality is, sleeping tickets, as I understand it, are coming back. I'm hearing I got a report of at least 3 camping tickets last week from Mike Bustos of the Homeless Services Center.
And yeah, I've been hearing them on the scanner too.
Really, how many have you heard about?
I've been hearing them. All around. Having them check on vehicles, they think it's a camper. Mm-hmm. Blah, 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 blah.
So
you never know for sure.
In the last week or two, how many have you heard?
In the last week or two? Probably about 6 or 7.
Really?
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm thinking maybe the thing to do is to, and I'm gonna kind of probably cut this conversation short, see if we can get some more calls, is encourage people to give a call in, see what they think of this idea of a protest starting after the vote on the sleeping ban. And just starting from there and seeing what happens after that. I mean, it's maybe we can provide some, get some food donated for Tuesday, have a little hot food, maybe to make things a little warm for the merchants downtown, who really, I think, are at the core of this whole process. The politicians are taking their marching orders from a combination of merchants, conservative residents, and certain staffer bureaucrats, including the police department. I mean, that's the way I look at it. Anything more you want to say?
No.
All right, well, then hopefully I'll see you if you show up at that meeting, or if not, I'll see you at the Citizens Police Review Board, which is meeting a week from Monday on the 13th of September at 5:30 on Monday.
Well, we're going to try to be there, that's for sure.
That's great.
And we're going to try to be there, and for sure, I think, you know, need to keep spreading it about 2:30. Tell everyone to be there, 2:30 Wednesday.
And 2:30 Wednesday, right. Yeah. That'll be this Wednesday coming up to support Bob LaMonica at the Farmers Market, where police declared he could not have a political table in a place where political tables have been standard for 5 years.
Right.
Talk to you more.
Just a second. Marilyn wanted to say something.
Okay.
Hi, Robert.
Hey.
And this is Marilyn Weaver, who I think eventually was the person that got on the Homeless Issues Task Force, and she's still around. Haven't talked to her in a number of, at least a year or two. I think I ran into her actually up in Felton. But here she is 20 years ago.
Hey, Marilyn.
Hi. I just wanted to I have one question, and it has cropped up in my mind a lot of times, because we're dealing with homeless issues and poverty issues and all that. It involves human rights, and I really have this question why the ACLU has not involved itself, because it isn't just Santa Cruz, it's nationwide. And I'd just really like to know why they haven't tried to help on this issue.
Well, I can only give you my interpretation, and it has to do with, of course, the specific lawyers and activists who are a part of the local ACLU. Some of them are interested in other issues, disabled issues, or develop personal animosities to some homeless activists like Bob Tarrant, who apparently developed a rather invidious hatred of me. Some of them get involved in, you know, a sort of a more conservative aspect of the homeless movement and then give up. Margaret Marr is an example of that. She initially began defending Jay Green for disturbing the peace and other charges, and then got involved with Sherry Connable's Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep, and cut off from the rest of the activists, hoping that by a more mild approach she could impress the city council. That didn't work. Actually, she became more radical working with the Coalition for a Citizens Police Review Board, but that board became such an obvious piece of junk that she kind of retired, kind of burnout as part of that. The general reality is the local ACLU is a conservative group that really is not concerned with local issues a lot. I mean, there are some exceptions. They did speak at city council around the downtown ordinances, the laws that make it illegal to sit within 10 feet of a shop or ask for money peacefully after dark. They spoke against that, but they represented, several lawyers represented sitting ban cases in 1994 and 95. But since then, I am not aware the ACLU has done anything except one speech at city council against the curfew and along the riverfront, I believe it was, or the youth curfew, one of the two, at city council. They are just moribund. You know, they are not interested. They don't really exist as much of an organization here.
I tried to call them, and I couldn't. They said that I would be able to get a hold of them through a website, but there is no phone number here.
You know, if you call me off air at 423-HUFF, I can probably give you some names of current members, and they could probably set you down. If you want to start, you know, kicking their ass a little, that might be good. But I would, you know, I don't know whether I would want to encourage you to go that way, because I wouldn't tell you to put a lot of energy in there, you know. Because it hasn't worked in the past. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, the future is always new and you never can tell, but so far in the past it's been difficult.
Yeah, I just thought that they would have a little more clout and somehow would really want to be involved in something like this, because it is we're dealing with basic human rights.
You would think so, wouldn't you? In Pacific Grove, the ACLU is involved. In Salinas, the ACLU is involved. In San Jose, I believe the ACLU is involved, and I certainly in Palo Alto and San Francisco, the ACLU is involved, but dear liberal Santa Cruz doesn't seem to be too involved. Maybe they think that the city council is so progressive already, or they can just, you know, go to sleep, and they can, because they don't have to sleep outside, right?
Yeah, that's the difference. Well, I'll call you after the show and get the numbers that you said.
423 Huff. It'll be a, you'll be catching a voice message, and I'll get back to you. Leave me a number you can be reached at. Is that possible?
Yes,
okay.
I can do that.
Do that.
I'll do that because I really would like to pursue that, because that's been a question all along. Why aren't they helping out in this battle to ensure people's basic human rights?
Yep. Thanks a lot, Marilyn.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Phone lines are open, 427-3772. We are approaching the last 10 minutes of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. And, of course, phone lines are non-existent in 2021 here, other than if you call to leave a message with me if you want to talk about the show or be interviewed on some issue that we're talking about, you think you have some good information on, you can do that by phone if you can reach me, and I will try to get back to you. That's, again, the same number as it was 21 years ago, 423-4833. Actually, it's 22 years ago now, I guess. 1999. Also, just a quick update from 2021. Apparently, the library is now making available, in case you didn't already know, that's the downtown library, access to computers for 45 minutes, at least. That's what I was told by the cheery Friends of the Library person who is backing the new Let's Dump the Library Under the Parking Garage proposal, which I disagree with, but nonetheless seems to indicate there's a slow opening up of the library happening. You can now pick up your books directly. You don't have to wait for them to come to the curb. You can walk inside, at least the area right outside the library, and pick up a book if you've ordered one. And you can also use the computer for 45 minutes, supposedly. I haven't tried to do it, so let me know how successful that is. Back to 1999.
Your radio Santa Cruz, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is David Silva.
Hi,
again.
David.
I'm a little upset here about the letter that Robert got. McGrath.
Doug got, yeah.
That letter was supposed to have gone out to everybody that applied before the task force started meeting, and I've had to, get on Catherine's ass and get on Don Lane's ass and get that clear over and over and be promised that over and over again.
You're talking about the letter that said that, you can apply, and we'll come back to you in a couple of weeks for Homeless Issues Task Force vacancies, right?
Well, what disturbs me is that they were supposed to invite all those who had applied to participate, to come and join, to let them know that they were invited, because there were a lot of people that have never volunteered for anything before, and it was a broad-based, wide community representation, and the original letter that you didn't make, it was kind of a shutdown letter. But what really disturbs me, Robert, is that Don Lane is saying that there are two seats vacant. I'm sorry, there's four or five seats vacant.
That's my understanding.
Because the task force is to be 12 or 13 people. Now, the citizen, the downtown association seat has not been approved yet, even though the person is voting. The homeless seat that was occupied is vacant, and Laura Tucker's seat is vacant. So, I'm not sure if there's six legal voting members, which would mean, to get up to 12 or 13, you need to have, six or seven. But I know there's at least four or five seats that have never been filled.
Right.
So it's very disturbing that letter and the math that's being done. Don Lane when he was told by Catherine to go ahead and send that letter out, they had some other conversation. I guess they were only going to fill two seats and put homeless people on it, and not have a student representative, not have Eastside business representative, not have the broad representation that they had promised, and put all the weight on the few of those that they did pick.
And the Catherine he speaks of, that's David Silva, as I mentioned before, a longtime activist, no longer alive, who... He's referring to Catherine Byers, who was the Turncoat mayor, originally liberal, who actually ran successfully along with Tim Fitzmaurice for the seat vacated by Chris Crone, and she occupied that position only very briefly until November of last year. But she's a sort of the West Side liberal. She's liberal on some things, but not on homeless issues. She began as a liberal on homeless issues, along with Celia Scott back in the 90s, but that changed. When she acquired a majority on city council, she went to the right, which I was going to say it's like Joe Biden, but Joe Biden's really always been to the right with legislation empowering and funding police throughout the country and supporting and masterminding the Iraqi war of 2003.
I just seems like that's what they precluded. And this is just, I'm just extremely, extremely irritated.
What do you think of the idea, David, of a protest after the 5:30 meeting on Tuesday when the Homeless Issues Task Force will be meeting at the Civic Auditorium?
I think it's all fine and well. I don't think it can come of much at this point after Labor Day weekend, getting something organized for Tuesday.
Right.
I don't think it can come too much at this point. But there, it certainly is becoming more and more apparent to me that either Don Lane is slow-witted or Don Lane is playing the game here. I've already had a few fights with him about materials not being ready and about people not being informed of meetings and so forth. But now to actually send a letter out saying that there's two vacancies when, in fact, if you just do simple math, there's four or five, is just outrageous. I think we're going to have to realize that this task force, what it's set up to do, is to bring in the community. We do have to have businessmen that are willing to, like, have their parking lots, you know, the thing that they voted with two cars for parking lot. We do have to organize these kind of things and bring the broader community in. And we do have to realize this task force is also to represent the neighborhoods and the people that are impacted by any decisions that are made about regulation of overnight survival sleeping. But
so it was an attempt to draw together different aspects of the community. The changes made 4 or 5 months before in the wake of the City Council's committee to examine the camping ordinance, like they called themselves a task force to examine the camping ordinance over the winter of 1998 to 99, did make the changes that added to the you can park three vehicles in a church parking lot if they give permission, and you can now park two vehicles in a business parking lot if they give permission. Also, there could be no more than 8 hours of community service mandated for a violation of the sleeping or blanket sections of the camping ordinance, which is still, I guess, important because that's still the current law. That's the camping ban law right now. It's still the old law and will continue. It may continue to be for quite a while in spite of this proposed new law. And again, as I said before, the law doesn't matter. It's the police practice that matters, and that's what we have to really focus on. Also changing in 1999 was the fact they turned the whole sleeping sections of the camping ordinance into an infraction rather than a misdemeanor. But that was essentially reversed a decade later when the city, under a reactionary city council, passed an ordinance that if you get three infractions of any kind, the fourth infraction, all subsequent infractions will be treated as misdemeanors, even if they're not related to those three infractions. Or if you don't go to court and deal with those infractions, you can be charged with a special misdemeanor. That was passed at the instigation of the shitty council, as I like to call them.
And I certainly encourage you to get as many homeless people there and get as many homeless people seated, and the homeless seats are allocated. It's just that I think that every seat is important. The broader the community representation, the more we'll come up with a true solution. And, of course, then we still also have the fact that even if we were to change the sleeping ban law, we were to take the word sleeping out of there, you were talking about a ticket on your show the other night where somebody got a ticket at the wrong time, and then when they decided it was the wrong time for since it was not sleeping section, they said, oh, it applies to the setting up campsite section. That we have to make sure that the police force doesn't treat a repeal of the sleeping ban exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the case of Anthony Douglas you're talking about.
Yeah, so we have to realize that, you know, we want the city to repeal the sleeping ban and also to order the independent, autonomous police state police force to also stop enforcing their own laws.
Their own edicts.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that, of course, is still true. The wording of the current camping services and standards ordinance does define setting up a campsite as itself a crime, which can be treated as a misdemeanor if you do it more than twice. And we know that people don't have to set up a campsite and sleep more than twice, I don't know, in a week. You know, just, you know, be tough. Go without sleep.
And that was community activist David Silva talking. And David, of course, has a wealth of information, and we have a wealth of phone calls.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert, it's me again.
Hey, Laura.
Hi, sorry to take up
No,
call.
No, come on
There's
back. Glad to have you aboard.
Tucker.
Well, I was just thinking, I kind of missed the caller that called after me, except for some of her last comments, and she was complaining about calling a voicemail and how do you get back to a homeless person.
Right.
So I wanted to give my home phone number, although it's very hard to get me to.
But at least you won't lose your 35 cents.
Right, that's right. Right, which is 459-0837.
459-0837 for Laura Tucker. We're talking to a staff member slash staff member and a task force member.
No longer the number,
of course. Also,
Give us that number again.
459-0837.
How late can people call?
Oh, I have my ringer off if it's the wrong time, so just call at 2 a.m. I don't care. You know, sometimes
and
I'm
you,
up. And
you won't lose 35 cents if you call, and unlike the number I gave you before, Ken Cole's number, you can call any time, day or night, weekend or weekday.
And right? Ken Cole, you can stop in probably, too. I don't know, but
yeah,
I was assuming that. And then also at the last Hot Issues meeting, and this isn't, I guess, been put out to the public yet, Nancy Anicito did mention that she wanted to make her, I don't know if she's actually done that or changed her mind or what, but she was talking at the time about making her number public for people to get a hold of as well. And I don't know if she's listed. She represents the Harvey West community, but, you never know. She says that, anyway. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about was the homeless seats. I was saying that there's two homeless seats available, but there is actually four or five positions to be filled on the task force, and if I am not to be a task force member, there is five or six.
That's what David Silva was saying,
Yeah. So
again, the number for people to call if they want to get in touch with you to get information.
459-0837, and I also think that Doug McGrath, Marilyn Weaver, and Donna Dice, really, it's just a no-brainer to get them on there. They've got experience, they're very articulate, they're home.
Donna Dice was a van dweller who no longer lives in Santa Cruz, who was had her arm fractured by one of the police officers, essentially for trying to get back into her van as the officer was confronting her for the crime of, I don't know, puffing a marijuana pipe medicinally out on the area along Lighthouse. I guess it's Westcliff Drive.
Homeless.
Not to mention Dan Hopkins.
Except for Donna. Donna is from the who?
Dan Hopkins.
Oh, yeah, right. But, you know, Marilyn Weaver and, she's also, we'd have more women on there, and Doug McGrath, you know, their applications have been in there for a long time, and I was going to ask you this question. You know, I don't know if there's any kind of, what criteria do they have to pick and choose? Can they just discriminate against people because they don't want them on from past, you know, like maybe what happened down at the Homeless Services Center for some reason, now they're not getting on the task force, why they haven't been
chosen.
You know,
I don't know actually who makes the choices of the non-council member choices. I suspect there's a process. I'm not terribly... I'd like to make sure that those of us who are putting some energy into this process that goes on and on and on also are aware that what we really want to do is come together in a real process that involves activists doing things outside
this. Yeah, well, I totally agree with you there, and I think that your
fucking
idea,
committee, which is going nowhere at the moment.
Right. People parking downtown is an excellent idea.
Right. I mean, I think I would like to see five people volunteer to help David Silva do some monitoring. They get a hell of a lot further than waiting for the Homeless Issues Task Force to figure out its process or to get Catherine Byers to appoint enough people to be on the board.
Yeah.
I mean, I would encourage people, you know, who call you, Laura, to also tell you in your role as a Huff member or as a Huff sympathizer or as a person concerned about homeless rights that, you know, they'd like to help David Silva and, you know, help him form an ad hoc group that'll work with businesses and actually do something rather than talk about how to work on the issues of someday doing something.
Well, call back and give his number too. And also, my voicemail is extension 208 on the Community Action Board. It's just a voicemail.
457-9754, extension 208 for Laura Tucker. And if you've missed any of these numbers, I will try to put them on my message machine, though that may not be till Tuesday or so.
You know what else you should do is
at 423 Huff.
Put Free Radio Santa Cruz number on there too.
There's a number.
Because they're not listed. So I had to call around to get it.
Good point. Okay, I will have to make a note of that.
Anyway,
anything
just
more
an
you
idea.
Want to say?
Okay, thanks.
Thanks a lot, Laura.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And we are winding our way toward the end of the infamous Bathrobes Beers Broadsides show. I want to thank you for being with us. Have a couple minutes left, but this is just about the end. So if you got anything to say, you better, as they say, smoke them now. Smoke them or choke them. That's where we're at. This is
a show that will return on Thursday from 6 in the evening to 8 at night. We're concerned with civil rights for the homeless. Right now it sounds like we're concerned with bureaucracy for the homeless, and I apologize. It looks like they have successfully sidelined us for at least a while, but, you know, we're not giving up here, though it may sound like we're getting entangled in the barbed wire bureaucracy, and we are, of course. That's what happens. Other upcoming items that might be of interest to folks, and this is bureaucratically speaking, there's the Crone Crapper Commission or Bathroom Task Force. And maybe, you know, I don't know if Eleanor can bring her concerns about telephones for disabled people to this group. Probably not. But that's happening from 10 to 12 on Wednesday, September 8th, room 202, the Public Works Department down at City Hall. I believe that on September 9th at 7 p.m., the Loudon Nelson video "To Serve and Protect" about police abuse in Santa Cruz is going to be shown again, but I'm not entirely sure on that issue, and I'll be giving you more information at the next show when I will be joining you, 6 to 8, on Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I will definitely be at the Homeless Issues Task Force, hopefully looking for some recruits and trying to pay as little attention as possible to the bullshit and as most attention as possible as I can to actually seeing us pressing for real action, real community organizing. And I do appreciate all you've called in today. I hope that you join Bob LaMonica at 2:30 on Wednesday at the Farmers Market to, and again, I'm afraid it's going to be more of a, you know, police suddenly evaporate, but that's good. The police evaporate, that's good. But show Bob your support. He's the man who's had to suffer the pressure from the police department for simply exercising the constitutional rights that the rest of us take for granted. And when they start putting pressure on one of us, then we better be there, or when one of us collapses, you can bet it will affect all of us. So give a call to Bob LaMonica at his phone number, which I believe is 457-2670, if you want to get more information or help him either with the rent control stabilization initiative. If you want help with So let me. Oh dear. Yeah. Let me repeat that because it got missed. We have Laura Tucker on the line, and she is still around with us and has a few memories of what happened. You said there was no food other than maybe coffee and maybe a breakfast bar. And what else were your thoughts?
I mean, I don't remember. So we didn't have a lot of homeless people that showed up for every meeting. We did have people that would come and speak to the task force, but it wasn't a situation where they were providing food and, you know, inviting a bunch of people. There may be an event or something that I'm forgetting, so forgive me for that. I think Linda or Don Lane or anybody else that was around might be remembering something that I don't, but
do you have any general assessment of the what I call the Homeless Icky Task Force?
General assessment? Well, I had given you activists, the final,
and if you look at the members of the meet of the task
just a
force,
here.
How many of them?
We actually got your 1999 voice suddenly broke in there. Go ahead.
Oh, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, it'll be coming on the air shortly or on the net. So
I mean, gosh. I feel like if I had a conversation and you reminded me of a few things and I talked to a few people, I would have a better answer. It's just early in the morning, and
we'll do that. We'll do that. Yeah, we'll do that at some point because I am running to get this up. It's due up in 10 minutes. We'll see how I can do on that. And we'll get back and talk about it again at some point, particularly if you bring it up.
Let's do that. Let's talk ahead of time, and then you can interview me, and I'll be a little bit more.
Sounds good. Talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye. That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. If you have questions, comments, give me a call, 831-423-4833. This is a 2021 number. It is reachable. Give me a call, and we'll chat.